Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show, where international author, speaker, teacher, and philosopher Dr. John DeMartini shares with you exactly how to break through whatever is holding you back from your best life. Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show, where today we're talking all about how you can have an amazing life. This episode is going to help you get clear around what exactly it is you would love to achieve, how you can stay focused and committed to doing something that's truly meaningful to you, and then how to get past the obstacles and the plateaus that are going to show up so you can achieve more than you ever dreamed possible. So if you've ever caught yourself thinking, maybe now I would be more successful or wealthy or in a relationship, or even if this is the right path for you, this is the episode you want to be listening to. For those of you who are brand new to Dr. DeMartini's material, he is a human behavioral specialist with studies in over 290 different disciplines, or ologies as John calls them. And over the course of a 45 plus year career, John has gone from 17 and nearly dying in the back of a tent with strychnine poisoning to becoming a master of his life and then allowing others to see that same divine beauty in the world. This podcast is going to be an exploration of some of his theories and thoughts and inspirations so you can draw from that and implement them into your own life. Each episode will feature a different series. They go for varying lengths depending on what the teachings are that John wants to share with you. And over the course of the next few weeks, months, and years, you're going to learn the intimate details of exactly how you can begin to master your life. If you would like to take the very first action from this podcast, John recommends to head over to drdemartini.com, where not only will you find all of John's materials in one central location, but you will be able to do the values determination process, which is a central pillar of all of John's teaching. So enjoy the episode, and we look forward to speaking to you very soon.
Dr. DeMartini, many people set their compass to aim for an amazing life. They set goals to be, do, or have anything their heart desires, and yet only a few people feel like they're actually living an amazing life. Why is this?
Well, I mean, there's probably many reasons, but some common ones is that many people do not know on a conscious level what they truly value. Many people think they value something, but their life doesn't demonstrate a commitment to obtain it. And I'll give you an example. If I stand in front of 10,000 people or 1,000 people or 100 people, and I ask the people in that audience, how many of you would like to be financially independent? Most likely every hand goes up, and 99 to 100% of the room will put their hand up. And then I will ask them, how many of you are financially independent? And unless I'm in a very elite group, most of the hands go down. And I'll say, what percentage of the population actually obtained financial independence? And I'll hear anywhere from 1% to 5% from the audience, but it's actually less than 1%. And so what happens is you got 99 to 100% of the people putting their hands up saying they want financial independence, but less than 1% actually obtain it. And so that's a vast difference. And even those people say, I want to be financially independent, their life doesn't demonstrate their behavior is leading them towards that outcome. And what they're usually fantasizing about is having a life of the lifestyles of the rich and famous and spending money in consumables and buying things and living this great life, but not actually the methodical, consistent investment into assets that will ever allow them to have that financial independence. So they're not having to work their life for money, that the money starts to work their life, its life for them. So unless you have a value, a higher value on buying assets than buying immediate gratifying consumables and depreciables, you're not likely to ever get ahead to where your money can work for you to be able to have that kind of lifestyle. So I think that most people have a delusion and a fantasy about what they think they want, and what deep inside on an unconscious level, what they want is not matching it. And so they're setting goals or objectives that aren't really, really, truly meaningful and inspiring to them. And they're kind of whims, like New Year's resolutions that they think they're going to stay with, but it peters out within weeks. So the key is to set goals that are congruent, that are truly matching what you really value and what your life demonstrates. even today in the master planning program, I've had people come up to me and they've written down some things that they think they want. And I'll ask them a question. Does your life truly demonstrate that you're moving towards this and you've got evidence already on the plate that's letting you know this? Is this really truly important to you? Or are you just writing this down as a whim right now? And in some cases, they were, when they were honest, they had to realize, no, I haven't done anything towards this. This is something I just like to do. I said, but if your life's not demonstrating it, it must not be that important to you, because something that's really important to you, you take actions towards. So the first thing is that to identify what's really important to you instead of what you think it is, and to not minimize yourself and subordinate to people on the outside that you think and admire. You think, oh my God, I wish I had their life. And then I think I'm going to start doing that. I had a person the other day in my program, the Breakthrough Experience, that said to me, well, I think I'm going to start changing. I think I'm just going to make it now that my highest value is making wealth. And I said, if it was that easy, we'd all be easily able to be wealthy. If you don't really have a high true value on doing something that's actually going to give you that result, you're likely to just beat yourself up. And anytime you set a goal that's not aligned with your highest values, you are going to beat yourself up. You're going to self-depreciate. So the reason why majority of people don't live an amazing life is they aren't setting goals that are truly congruent. Two, they're not taking the time for themselves. They don't feel they're worth taking the time to plan and to think it out and have foresight. And they're living through trial and error and banging their head against the wall, wondering why they're not getting what they say they want, because what they actually say they want is not matching what's truly meaningful to them, that's really priority to them. That's why I do the value determination process on my website, to help people at least start on the journey of identifying what they value in their life, because a lot of people think something's important to them, but their life doesn't demonstrate it. Your life demonstrates your real values. That's so crucial. I can say that 1,000 times and still people won't always hear that. Your hierarchy of values dictates your destiny, and what you value most is what you're actually going to get done and you're going to be committed to. You know, like just like you have a 12-year-old boy who loves video games, nobody has to remind him to do his video game. He's spontaneously inspired to do it. He masters the video game and he goes on to more challenging video games. But if you asked him about doing his homework or his chores, he's probably going to need motivation. Well, if you're setting goals that require motivation on the outside to keep you doing it, that's not the one you're going to achieve the greatness in. You're only going to achieve the most when you're doing something that spontaneously truly inspires you, that you really can't wait to get up in the morning and do. So the reason why people don't have an amazing life is because they're setting goals that aren't theirs. They're envying other people. They're trying to imitate other people. They're living vicariously through other people's lives, and they're not giving themselves permission to be them. And I've said before that the magnificence of who you are is far greater than any fantasies you keep injecting or imposing on yourself. So don't try to be somebody you're not. Don't be second at being somebody else. Be first at being you. And make sure you're setting objectives that are truly congruent with what your life demonstrates. When I worked with a gentleman the other day that had I asked him, what does he do every day that he spontaneously does? Nobody has to remind him to do. And we narrowed it down to 4 things that he does. We then orchestrated a structure of a goal and a plan around that. And he's been inspired and on fire around that because he's doing it anyway. So now he's figured out how he can actually make a living and be rewarded financially doing something he automatically does. And his energy levels went up immediately. And this is a guy that's a pretty intelligent guy and he's done a lot of personal development, but he's never been asked that question. And he's just trying to go and do something that wasn't really gelling, and he was feeling scattered and disjointed because there was a part of him that had a break on, because we know what's really truly valuable to us inside. We have kind of a bullshit meter inside us that lets us know it when we're accurate or when we're not. And if you're really spontaneously inspired to do something, you know you've got it. So don't subordinate to the world on the outside. Live truly from within. What's truly important, what your life demonstrates, that you show consistent commitment to, that you're building momentum in. That's where you're going to excel.
Thank you, DeMartini. So if you find that one real goal, that congruent goal, the one that's truly aligned with what's important to you, then what would you say is the wisest approach to the achievement of that goal? What advice can you share in terms of helping us be more efficiently or effective in achieving those goals?
Well, anytime you're setting a goal that is congruent and is aligned, your body and brain let you know it. And the way your brain responds is that the blood, glucose, and oxygen in the brain goes into the forebrain, which is called the neocortex. And this is the more advanced part of the brain, as opposed to the allocortex, which is a more primitive part of the brain. This part of the brain is involved in foresight, not hindsight, teleologics and purposefulness, not telonomics, which is learning through trial and error. And it inspires inspired vision, it inspires strategic planning, it inspires a desire to execute the plans and a desire to self-govern to achieve it, because you don't want to be distracted from things that aren't as important. And when you are doing something that's really high in your values, those four things show up automatically. You see it. You'll get a tear in the eye and you'll look and you'll go, you'll see a vision of what you want to do and you'll see how you can do it. That's why the old proverb, when the why is big enough, the house take care of themselves. When you have a big enough reason for doing something and it's high enough on your values, you see a strategy in your mind, you see it. You've heard the biblical statement, those with a vision flourish and those without a vision perish. It's true. But that vision is an inspired vision that comes online because that executive center in the brain, that forebrain, has a connection back to the visual cortex. And the second you're congruent, that visual cortex lights up and you see it. And this is what happened to me when I was 17 and that has now been painted by Andrew Tischler. It's an inspired vision about what I wanted to do with my life that I've been working on all these years. So that's a sign, and your physiology and brain give you feedback and let you know by giving you a tear of inspiration, by having lucidity and clarity, by a feeling that it's impossible for you not to do, by feeling it's destined and seeing exactly how you can do it and actually urgently wanting to get into action on it, not procrastinate on it. You're ready to take action and you automatically don't like to get distracted from it. You just stay focused on it. When people come up to you, hey, you want to do this? You go, right now, I'm on a mission and no, thank you. You can easily say no, thank you to distractions and you say yes to the things that's really priority. This is a sign that you've got a real clear goal and that you're moving forward on it. And then you have a tendency to want to prioritize your time, want to prioritize your energy, want to prioritize your resources, you want to prioritize who you're hanging out with, you want to prioritize what you say, what you spend your time on. You want to prioritize all the things around you so you're sticking to the highest priority things because the fulfillment of doing something that's high in your values is worth it. So you find yourself efficient and effective and prioritized and purposeful and productive. And you don't have a desire to get distracted by lower priority things because you're engaged in what you're inspired by. Anybody at work that's got a project that they're really inspired by, they don't want to take a break. They don't want to even go and eat. They want to get their food brought and continue working. They don't want to get go take a coffee break. In Kitchener, Ontario, and I was teaching the breakthrough experience, and the head of Harvard Business College was there, the University of Harvard. And at the end of the program, he asked if he could take me to dinner. And in the dinner, he was sitting across from me, and he says, you know what you said in the breakthrough experience is so true. He said, I've seen this live in my years at Harvard. He said, when I sit from my office, I can see all the business officers from my office and all the professors that are PhDs that are newer on the block. Most of them go home at 5, 6, no later than 7:00 PM. All the professor emeritus that are more dedicated to their work and been with it for many decades, they're usually there 9 and 10 o'clock at night. But if you look at the Nobel Prize winners' offices, they're there past midnight. They don't think about anything but their highest priority. And they're the ones that solve the greatest problems in the world. And that's why they end up getting the greatest rewards in life. So that's a sign. You don't even pay attention to time. You're not counting time. You're not saying, oh, when's the next break? Or when can I go and do something else? You don't want to take a break. I was doing a interview with the Wall Street Journal a little over a year ago. And they were doing an interview and they wanted me to actually say what they wanted to write. And I told him, if you're going to ask me to do an interview, you're going to write what I type, or otherwise we're going to stop the interview. Otherwise, I'm just going to be used as a puppet for your belief system. So if you want my advice, then please publish that. And they said, well, the research shows that people need a break. Every 50 minutes to an hour, they need a break for 15 minutes. I said, that's bull. That's absolutely not true. The people who I know who are engaged and inspired by what they do, they don't care about breaks. They only take a break when it's absolutely essential and they're engaged. And the people that are unengaged and uninspired, they're constantly needing breaks. So the research you're reading is basically somebody doing research on people that are not engaged, not inspired, not really fulfilled in what they do, and you're making that a standard that you're now promoting. So no, that's not true. Because when people are truly inspired by what they do, they don't think about time and space, and they don't want to escape it. And if they have to take a break, it's only to quickly fuel themselves or relieve themselves, and they want to get back to their work. And some people, or they want to take a break only to meditate and contemplate new ways of doing what they want to do in their project. So you want to make sure that you're showing signs of doing something you love. You know, Warren Buffett talks about tap dancing to work. You want to live your life in a way where you're actually can't wait to get up in the morning and do what you love doing. So people can't wait to get that service. So I'm a firm believer in prioritizing what you do and making sure that you're doing what's really meaningful and what's really inspiring and what's really productive.
Thank you, John. And I've often heard you say that there's only three things in life that we have power over. Can you elaborate and explain on that a little bit further?
Yes. We have the ability, we have sensory neurons. They come from the periphery going into the central nervous system. You got inner neurons, which are associative and commissural neurons in the brain. And you have motor neurons, which are effectors that are going out to move muscles or move cellular muscles inside the cell. These affective and effective and inner neurons are involved in sensory perception, motor action, and inner neuron decision processes. These are the only three things you really have control over in your life: your perceptions, your decisions, and your actions. So anytime you're setting a goal, if it's not one of those three things, you really don't have control over it. And you don't want to set a goal you have no governance over. So you want to make sure that your goals are aligned to those three priorities, to make sure that they're a sensory perception that you're committing to alter your perceptions of, a decision that you're basically gathering data for to make a wise decision, or a prioritized action that's your leading you to an outcome that you made through your decisions and your perceptions of the past to make sure you get an outcome. This is why strategic planning is so important, because it allows you to foresight and mitigate the risks and foresight the action steps that will give you the highest probability of the action so you can prioritize your actions.
Perfect. Thank you, John. Just quickly, I know you elaborated further on setting priorities that will lead to leading a more effective life, but excuse me, can you lead us a little bit further on how to make the wiser decisions? You said that obviously we got to align our values to those and make sure that we're aligning our values to our goals, but could you elaborate a little bit further on exactly how that makes us wiser to lead an amazing life?
Well, an amazing life is defined by you. And each person has an individual set of priorities and values in life. They're like snowflake specific. No two people have the same set of values. So no two people could have the same life. That would be amazing. My amazing life would be traveling and teaching. Somebody else's amazing life may be climbing mountains. Another person's amazing life may be raising beautiful children and watching them grow every day. Another person's amazing life may be doing a social cause that makes a difference. As I met a gentleman the other day that's involved in an initiative of education. I know other people that are in spiritual quest. They just want to meditate and chant all day. And that's an amazing life for them, to be able to organize their life where they can sit and do spiritual quest. I met a gentleman last night, actually, that wants to live a monastic life and wants to just study spirituality as he defines it, according to his Christian mysticism. So everybody has a different idea what's an amazing life, but that is based on their values. And so structuring their life by priority according to their values is what makes the difference. And to try to think it's going to be any other way is really kind of delusional, because if you don't get up in the morning and fill your day with high priority actions that inspire you, your day is going to fill up with low priority distractions that don't. It's going to fill up with entropy and breakdown instead of negentropy, which is life physics. And so it's a key just to define what that is. And if you want an amazing life, you have to define it. And if you don't take the time to define it, this is what happens. Any area of your life you don't empower, somebody's going to overpower you. And if you don't empower yourself intellectually and develop your mind and study and learn, you'll probably be told what to think. And you may not even know you're being done. That's being done, because you may have just parroted what people thought and never asked if that makes any sense. I've had people come up to me and say, well, I want to be positive all the time, or I want to be peaceful all the time. And then they wonder why they're not always positive. They have also negative thoughts, and they're not always peaceful. They have turmoil. And I asked them, well, is that even possible to do that? Is it possible to be one-sided, or does life have both sides? So some people are not even questioning what they've been told. They're parroting something that is a dopamine fix and an opium of the masses that has no basis in reality, and they never questioned it, and they're not thinking for themselves, and they're just parroting what somebody else has told them, And that person's been selling them a bill of goods and they never questioned it. So you, if you're not empowering yourself intellectually, you're going to be told what to think. If you're not empowering yourself in business, you'll be told what to do. If you're not empowering yourself financially, you'll be told what you're worth with the Social Security or some sort of a government pensions or whatever at the end of your life. If you don't empower yourself in your relationship, you'll probably settle for less than what you want and feel trapped. And if you don't empower yourself socially, you'll be told what to believe and, you know, with the paradigms and the propaganda that the society tells you. And then if you don't empower yourself physically, you'll probably be told what organs that you have to remove or what drugs to take in your life. And if you don't empower yourself spiritually, you'll probably be taught something irrational that you maybe believe without actually thinking it through, as most people do. And they've never even questioned some of their philosophical or existentialist spiritual constructs. So you're here to empower yourself. And you're here, you have the power to do that. And that's by prioritizing according to what you value most and linking the other areas of your life to that, so you can empower as many areas as possible in your life. I'm a firm believer you can empower all of them. I'm doing everything I can in my own life and in helping people in their life to do that. And I've absolutely seen it in my own life that it's doable. And I've seen it in some of my students' life that it's doable. So there's no reason why we can't empower and do something extraordinary with our life and have an amazing life. Now, I was doing a TV show many years ago when I came out with a book, You Can Have an Amazing Life, just 60 days. And I was about to come from behind the curtain and come out on the stage and sit in the couch next to the host. And when I got out there, I was assuming they were going to ask me about my book and stuff. But the guy said, now, Dr. DeMartini, you say in this new book that you can have an amazing life in just 60 days. You don't really believe that people can do that. You don't really expect us to believe that you can change your life in 60 days. I mean, most people are stagnant, they're stuck. They don't change. They don't make any difference in their life. And that's just wishful thinking. You sure that's not just bunk and hype? And I wasn't expecting that. I was prepared for it, but I wasn't expecting it from the guy. And I looked the guy straight in the eyes, right between the eyes, and I got watery tears in my eyes. And I looked at him and I said, sir, it would be impossible to convince me you can't change your life in 60 days. Absolutely impossible. And he said, and he looked at me and he goes with a funny look. And I said, my life changed in 60 minutes. One man, 1 hour with one message, one night, shared with me something that changed my life in 60 minutes, and my life has never been the same. So nobody has the right to tell somebody they can't change their life in 60 days or 60 minutes. Because the truth is, one decision can change it. One change of perception can do it. One set of priority actions can change your life and change the trajectory of your life. But you have to decide. You have to decide to change your perceptions about reality. If you run around and think that the world's supposed to take care of you and you're supposed to be, you know, entitled to the world being always kind to you, then that perception is probably going to cause all kind of turmoil in your life, because that's not real. And if you make a decision to say, well, I'm a victim of my environment instead of a master of my destiny, well, you're going to be a victim all your life. I had a gentleman, a young boy that came to me, and he said to me, he said, you know, I didn't have a mother and father because I was abandoned and I lived in a foster dynamic. And the reason I've got this screwed up life is because I wasn't wanted. And I looked at him and I smiled and I said, so what you're saying is your life is in your mind screwed up because your parents rejected you and you didn't have parents. He said, yeah, I mean, that's the reason I'm all screwed up. And I said, well, that's a dissociation, a separation in cause and effect. And that belief system is bull. It's bunk. So I said, come with me. And I pulled out my computer and I pulled out on the internet famous celebrities of different fields in entertainment, education, Nobel Prize winners, great philosophers, great thinkers, great musicians, etc. A list of 700 famous people that all started out with no parents or one parent missing or eventually dying or something. They were orphans or they had parents that died. And there's 700 orphans. And I said, you're in this category. And he looked at all those names, and it was Sir Isaac Newton and Tycho Brahe and Steve Jobs and Wayne Dyer. And I went on down the list, and the guy, he goes, so all these people had missing parents or one or many, both parents missing? I said, yeah. He just stopped, and he goes, it has nothing to do with what you've been through. It has nothing to do with what you're going through. It's what you decide to perceive, decide, and act. And if you turn that into an opportunity, you can take this and use it to your advantage. Sir Isaac Newton's father died before he was born, and his mother left him when he was a very young baby to try to find a new man to take care of the family. And she left it with somebody who could take care of him temporarily. If it wasn't for that, Sir Isaac Newton wouldn't have been who he was. That was the perfection of his life. That's not in the way, that was on the way. I have a Nobel Prize winner that I had a meeting with that was called Paul Nernst. And he got a Nobel Prize for his understanding the origin of life and on the in more details about the genetic code. And when they probed him, he was about to give him the Nobel Prize. He was doing a research on his own life and he discovered something he didn't know. He was 50 some years old, he never knew that his older sister, who was 12 years older than him, was his mother. And his mother and father that he thought was his mother and father was his grandparents. His entire life, he never knew that, because when the 12-year-old's daughter or sister gave birth, the parents were so humiliated by having her having a child out of wedlock and being that young that they basically pushed her and lived somewhere else, and they raised the child. And so he never knew anything but his grandparents. He assumed that was his parents, and they weren't that much older. So he just assumed that was it until he got his Nobel Prize. Then he insisted that at the Nobel Prize, his real mother be there. And so the parents that were basically dishonored by the daughter later turned out to be the most honored by the daughter. And it was the most amazing reunion of the family. So the very challenges that you go through could be the greatest opportunities, greatest gifts. So it's not what happens to you, it's what you decide to do with them. And that's the, pardon me a second. It's not what happens, it's what you decide to do with it. And I am absolutely certain that you can take whatever you've experienced and you can use it as being on the way. I have people in the breakthrough experience every weekend that come in and they say, well, my father beat me, or my mother wasn't there for me, or they constantly fought, and I came with a dysfunctional family, and they come up with all kind of stuff. And they can always come up and run a story. And then sometimes they go to their therapist, and the therapist, you know, blame those reasons why they're the way they are and come up with labels and stuff like that. I've never found that to be true. Because in the breakthrough experience, I've had people with almost every imaginable background. And every one of those backgrounds can be turned into opportunity and be something to be thankful for. And anything you're not thankful for is baggage. Anything you are thankful for is fuel. So I don't believe that there's anything that's ever happened in your life that can't be used to a great opportunity to do amazing things. And that's why you want to prioritize your perceptions, prioritize your actions, and prioritize your decisions, and learn the art of asking questions to see everything on the way, not in the way. And that's a very important thing if you want to have an amazing life. And you deserve to have an amazing life. The true you is an amazing person, but you may have subordinated to the world on the outside and not given yourself permission to live authentically from within. And so that's crucial. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's what came through.
Definitely does. Thank you, John. And I would just like to find out what you call, if you could elaborate a little bit further on what you call wise decisions and how we can go about making more of those wise decisions.
Well, a wise decision is something that is balanced, that is real. Let's give an example. Let's say that you're infatuated with somebody and you see only the positives in this person. You meet somebody and you see way more positives than negatives, way more support than challenge, way more pleasure than pain, way more support, you know, or advantages over disadvantages. And you think, oh, I impulsively want to go spend time with him. And when you go there, you may actually didn't even realize that you're infatuated with the person and blinded by that. And so let's say that you do that and you end up going to Las Vegas and you meet them in one weekend and decide to get married at a little chapel there. I've seen that actually happen, and it's quite humorous. And then 3 weeks later, when you're going through a divorce and now you're having the pain associated with it because you didn't use your executive center to balance out the equation, you can actually hold yourself back from making a wise decision. So a wise decision is always going to have both sides. It's going to make sure that you think out the plans, think out all the pros and the cons, make sure that they're a balanced equation, you mitigate the risks of it. That's a real objective. The term objective means a balanced thought. Subjective means a biased thought. So when you're infatuated, you're biased. If you're resentful, you're biased. If you love somebody, not infatuated, but truly love somebody, for both sides, you have an objective construct. So when you're setting a goal, you want to make sure it's objective, not a subjective whim or a fantasy. So a real decision that's going to give you a result has already had the pros and cons thought through, and you're prepared for both sides. And a sign that you're doing something that's really high in your values is you're willing to embrace the pain and the pleasure, the support and the challenge, the both sides in the pursuit of the goal. An amazing life is going to include both support and challenge. If you're only going to grow as far as the challenges you can endure. And if you can't embrace the challenges in life, you're not going to go very far in life. I always say that a leader is pursuing challenges that inspire them instead of avoiding challenges that don't. And so you want to make sure that you're filling your day with challenges that do inspire you instead of having to attract challenges that don't. That's the key in life. So I think of a guy, a little boy that loves the video games. The second he conquers a video game, he goes after a more challenging video game to try to conquer a more powerful game. And he wants to bring himself to a new level. So when you're doing something that's high in your values, you look forward to challenge. You're ready to tackle it. You're not trying to avoid it. But if you're doing something that's low on your values, you're going to want to avoid challenge all the time and keep attracting challenges you don't want. So a real decision that's wise thinks out in advance both sides. You got to think out both sides of an event. And the goals, the people that I know that set real goals, think those through. And there's a new book that's out by Keith Cunningham that's on The Road Less Stupid. And I think that that's a nice little book because it's talking about how important it is to do critical analysis of your thoughts and not impulsively, blindly pursue fantasies and then have be hit broadside by the consequences of a not foresighted thought. That's the difference between an animal and a human. We have the ability to have foresight and to think things out with foresight and plan ahead and strategically plan and think about it and mitigate risks. And the animal just impulses or instincts. And those are by telonomic and by trial and error. And that's the least effective system. Better to have a heuristic structure of planning in advance and to think things through and know both sides of things in advance. Before you get married, I was in the Ritz Hotel in Paris, and Boris Becker, who was a tennis pro, and his girlfriend at the time were there adjacent to us in a table. And on the other side of us, my wife and I at the time, was the Prince and Princess of Japan. And they were sitting there, and you could not hear them because there were only six people in the restaurant. So you could hear everybody's conversation. And it's hard not to eavesdrop because it's interesting because these people are interesting people. You just kind of do it. They're probably listening in on us too. But it was interesting. Boris was a bit infatuated with his girlfriend. And they were impulsive, and they were displaying what it's like to have passion. Of course, their relationship was short-lived. The Prince and Princess of Japan are still together, and what they were doing is going through a 500-page document, page by page, asking each other questions because they were on their honeymoon, and they were getting to know each other. It was a royal marriage, and they're getting to know each other, and they were going through a very methodical, structured mechanism. And you're probably thinking, well, yeah, but I just want some romance. I just want a good hug and kiss. But the reality is they were doing the hug and kissing, but they were actually getting to know each other to find out what their values are, find out what priorities were, find out how they would react if they were in this situation, what they do. And somebody thought out in advance a whole lot of questions, like I do in my master plan program, a whole lot of questions in advance to think in advance before having to learn through trial and error. And that couple is still alive today and still together. And you could see that one was born out of an infatuation, and the other one was born out of logic and reason and feelings. There's a combination of both. It's wiser to incorporate both in your pathway.
Thank you, John. And I've heard you mention a lot, what is intention and how do we direct it to create a realistic goals? And what's the difference between intention and foresight?
Well, foresight is a planning process and looking at all the pros and cons and all the repercussions that you can anticipate and thinking out in advance what you will do if those things occur. Once you're clear about that, you'll then make a decision. And with that decision, then you'll have a clear intention of what you want to accomplish. And that intention will now be based on more of an objective goal instead of some subjective impulse. And people that are, again, subjectively impulsive, they usually get bit along the journey because it's like Michael Douglas in Fatal Attraction movie. He went out and did immediate gratification that cost him, and eventually almost got stabbed to death. But the person that thinks things through and takes their time in the dating process is more likely to find a a marriage partner that's a lasting marriage partner than it is to just do an impulsive dating and quickly get married without thinking it through. Not that some of those don't last, but they're less likely to if they don't have some idea of getting to know the real person, knowing what's really important to that person. So you want to be honest about what it is. So intention is simply the clear direction you want to take after you've made a decision about what you want to achieve. And then you have a clear intention of that achievement. And your intention or purpose and intention can be the same, or you could have an intention that's a subset of a purpose or intention that could be a goal that's a subset. I always say a purpose is through time and space. A goal is in time and space. A goal has an outcome that is a finite outcome, where a purpose is through time and space that you want to do it. I want to travel the world and to teach. That's a purpose. I want to teach in India on Tuesday. That's a goal.
Thank you, John. And in relation to manifestation, you have a formula that you've mentioned in the Breakthrough Experience, and you take people through that attend the Breakthrough Experience. Can you explain in detail each step, the importance of each step that you outline in your process at the Breakthrough Experience?
Well, the manifestation formula is a formula that I've used to help people live, as we said, a more amazing life. I learned the principles and the ideas from Paul Bragg. I then formulated it into a formula over the years in my own format. But it goes like this. It first starts with your highest value, which is your telos, which is your purpose. When people say, I don't know what my purpose is, all they got to do is look at what their life demonstrates that they spontaneously do that nobody has to remind them to do. And it's always in that direction. I mean, I've helped thousands of people get clear on their purpose in life and what they want to dedicate their lives to build momentum in life so they can live an amazing life. And it is an expression of their highest value. I'm certain about that. So you don't even want to go any further than that. Just look at what your life demonstrates that you spontaneously do that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do, and you'll know what your purpose is. So the first part of the formula is, what is your purpose? And if you try to set up a purpose and arbitrarily write up some flowery thing that sounds really cool, but it's not congruent with what you really value, you'll need motivation on the outside, incentives, remindings. You'll keep being distracted from it. You'll forget about it. It won't stay fresh in your mind. It won't be something you could look forward to doing every day. So you want to make sure that your purpose is clear, because the secret behind the secret left out of the movie, The Secret, that I was in over a decade ago, was that you don't want to set goals that aren't really truly meaningful and inspiring to you. Your telos, which is your highest value, which is your purpose, is the most meaningful thing you can pursue in life. And it is the thing that keeps you self-disciplined and the mean between polarizations and extremes. That's why it's called meaning. The meaning is based on the golden mean between the oscillations of up and down. It's the mean. So have meaning in life is the thing that is most disciplined, that is not has the least amount of volatility in your life. So identifying what that purpose is number one. Then realizing that if it is congruent with your highest value and it's true, you'll get inspired by it and you can't not think about it. Your innermost dominant thought becomes your outermost tangible reality, and you will spontaneously think about what it is that's most important to you in your life. So if you set a goal that's aligned with that, you won't have any difficulty thinking about it. It's hard to get it out of your mind. Nobody has to make me think about researching and teaching. I don't have to go, I don't have a thing where I'm laying there in the morning and somebody says, John, time to get up. Hey, you got to think about speaking and researching. That's not real. I spontaneously do it, because whatever's highest on your value is an intrinsic value. It spontaneously emerges in your psyche. It just immediately bubbles up inside. And it's something you don't need to be reminded for it. So if your purpose is something you have to be reminded of, and you have to be reminded to think about it, it ain't it. You don't need to be reminded for it. So make sure that the key of setting and obtaining greatness and an amazing life is simply making sure that you set goals that are truly congruent. That is so important. If you do, you will automatically think about it, and your innermost dominant thought will become your life. And you will automatically strategically plan for it, so you'll think out how you can get it. It's a spontaneous thing because the executive center comes online. The third one is vision. I've already mentioned that executive center comes online, you get an inspired vision and you see it in your mind's eye. There was a book many years ago called The Mind's Eye. It's a great book on how to focus yourself on that key vision that you want in life. And it's true. You will automatically do it. I can see. I have a vision, a painting by Andrew Tischler in my office. Was a great, magnificent painter from Melbourne, Australia, who now lives in New Zealand. And he's an amazing guy. And he helped capture the vision and inspiration that I had when I was 17 years old to travel the world and teach. And he painted it, and it's tear-jerking. He just captured the essence of it. He captured my inspiration. And when I go and I look at that, I get tears in my eyes, and I think, wow. And here's an inspired painter who captured an inspired moment of my inspired vision. And when I look at that, you can't not want to go and pursue that. So that every detail you leave out of the vision is an obstacle you'll face, and you'll want to plan things and put in the details in the vision automatically to create what you want in life. So having a purpose, dominating your thought on it, and seeing it in your mind's eye and visualizing it and feeling that it's already done, that's a sign of congruency. Feeling it's impossible for not to fulfill. Feeling it's already done in the present, not someday in the future, but it's right there in your mind's eye. You see it as if it's indelibly there. You're present. You're seeing it as if it's live. That's what I found. That's an inspired vision. That if you do that, you're unstoppable. The third one is your internal dialogue, your affirmations, if you want to call it, which means to make firm in one's mind. These affirmations are statements that are checkups from the neck up, that are basically congruent statements that align with what you visualize and what you think about, what your purpose is. You know, I say that I'm an international professional speaker traveling all over the world and stepping foot on every country in the face of the earth and inspiring people around the world. And that's something that I say inside my head, and it's something that's just true, and it rings true, and it's what I love doing. So you're basically articulating with an internal dialogue about exactly what you want when you're congruent, and it comes out spontaneously. You don't have to just think, oh, I need to write it down and memorize it. It's spontaneously, and you can't not write it down. It just comes out of your mind as you're walking down through life. And the next one is your feelings. There's basically six feelings that are signs of inspiration. You're truly grateful for, you have love in your heart, you're inspired by the vision, you're enthusiastically taking action on it, you feel certain about it, there's no wavering left, and you feel automatically present with it as if it's done. When you have those six feelings, you know you're on track, you know you're authentic, there's no wavering. But if you're having the polarized feelings, manic, depressive, excitement, you know, subduction. If you're basically sitting and you're polarized, then there's some sort of a part of your goals, philic and phobic instead of centered. So you want to keep refining your objective. The reason why we're doing a master planning program right now is to help people get clear about what they want to do and help them focus on the dream that they have. Because if they get clear on it, they increase the probability of making that happen. I'm a firm believer in foresight and goals in advance, instead of at the end of the day, finding out what your day gave you. I'd rather basically take, you know, people that fill their day with high priority actions, inspire them. They don't have as many distractions and that disinspire them. So the next one is basically writing things down and planning things out. And so I always say a short pencil is better than a long memory, or fast fingertips are better than just trying to store it in your head. It's better to have something down on paper and being able to delegate things out and have a plan, that instead of trying to carry all that information in your head all the time, getting it down on paper or getting it down on your computer and mapping out exactly what you want in life and writing it out so you concisely clarify it where it's really clear. On my goal book, which is 4,000 pages now with everything, I sometimes will spend, I've spent an hour and a half on one paragraph about exactly what I want in my life and type it out and write it out and get really clear on exactly how I want it to look. And I may just read it again and again and again and again until I get it, until I get a tear of inspiration. That's it. That's exactly how I want it. That's how I'm going to do it. That's what I'm going to achieve. And you write it down in space and time. You put down a space. When do you want to do it? Where do you want to do it? So it's clear in your mind. And if you're in a manic state, you'll tend to set too big a goals in too short a time frame. If you're a depressed state, you'll tend to set too small a goals in too long a time frame. And both of those are feedback systems to set real goals in real time frames. And so it's training yourself to do it. And when you're most inspired, you set more real goals and more real time frames, and you basically do what you say and walk your talk instead of limp your life. And then you want to basically, if you have all that laid out, you're going to want to act. Your executive center comes online and you're going to want to act, and you can't wait to get up in the morning and do it. I've been so inspired where I didn't even want to go to bed at night. I just wanted to start then. But I knew that it'd probably be wise for me to get at least a few hours sleep to get the most performance out of the next day. But I was on a roll, and your mind was just visually seeing it in your mind's eye at night. That's when you know you've got something that you're inspired by. And when you do, then you take actions on it. And your energy is infinite once you recognize the source. There's no lack of energy to somebody who's truly inspired by something that's got a clear mission of what they're going to do. They just want to get on with it. And your energy is directly proportionate to the vividness of the vision that you have. So mapping out that vision is what vitalizes you. People ask me, where do I get the energy that I have day after day after day, 7 days a week, traveling the world and everything else? It's just because I'm clear about what I want to accomplish in life. And that makes a difference. And then I have a map, and I metric it, and I'm keeping records of it. And I'm clear about what I want to accomplish, and that really makes a difference. And the next thing is basically matter, resources. But the thing is when you're setting a goal that's aligned with your highest values, you have what is called a selective biased attention in the brain. It allows you to see any opportunity that's out in your environment that'll help you get what you are, and you'll selectively filter out other things, and you'll see the resources or the matter out there that's going to help you do it. And you realize there's no limit on that because it's just abundant around you. And so that is what allows you the resources to achieve it. And when you're living congruently, you get the most resources. But if you're trying to set goals that aren't yours and you're subordinating to other people and trying to live vicariously through other people and trying to be somebody you're not to please other people all the time instead of serve other people, what you do is you don't have the executive center and the pulvinar region of the thalamus filtering your information, and you can't see opportunities that are in front of you. And you don't see that there's synchronicities all around you, and you miss out on those opportunities. But if you're congruent, you will take actions and you will see the resources around you. And the next one is when you're congruent by your highest value, your self-worth goes up because you're walking your talk and you're achieving it. You see things on the way, not in the way. Your self-worth goes up. Anytime you're doing ABCs, your self-worth goes up. Anytime you're doing XYZs of priorities, your self-worth goes down. So it's important to prioritize on a daily basis. And that's the whole manifestation formula. And if you feel deserving, you achieve and you feel grateful and you get to do what you love, and you'll end up with the next step of the formula, which is thankfulness. And if you're thankful for what you do and you document your thank yous every day, I have the largest collection of thank yous of anybody I've ever met in my entire world. All the people I've met around the world, millions of people, the largest list of gratitudes I have. Now, I was born on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe that had something to do with it, or maybe it's because I just learned that when you're grateful for what you got, you get more to be grateful for. But I document every single day all the opportunities that I have the opportunity to do. I keep records of it because I found that if I'm documenting what I'm doing, I'm getting feedback, I'm getting metrics, I'm getting thank yous, I'm getting my energy going, I keep my mind inspired, etc. And if you follow those 13 steps, you're going to end up saying thank you, and you're going to end up manifesting what it is that you want. An amazing life is yours, but it starts with congruency at the top. That's the key. And not setting fantasies that lead to phobias. If you set a goal that is all one-sided, you're guaranteed to have the opposite side come in to get you back to more objective states.
Thank you, DeMartini. And it's a beautiful way to outline and show that manifestation can be achieved by just following those steps. Our next question is how to deal with objections and other opinions that are persuading us from deviating from our chosen path.
Well, the only reason another person's opinion of you matters more than you is if you're subordinating to them and think their opinion is more than yours. I think we have a president in the United States who is a good example of somebody that doesn't let outer opinions interfere with his opinion. I think that's some people may not like Donald, but the reality is that there's one thing we can learn from him, that, you have to value what your own goals are too. I've called it the law of lesser pissers. If you have a choice of pissing others off of yourself, the other people are going to be transient in your life. You're going to be living your whole life. So you're going to have to say no to some other people. But you try to do it diplomatically. I'm a firm believer that you can come up with a communication skill that are skills to be able to say no to people. I have people that say, hey, that's wrong. What you're doing is wrong. And I go, well, thank you for your opinion. I appreciate it. I learned from Plato in his writings on Socrates. Socrates was being ridiculed by merchants in his time. And they were saying, why are you teaching the youth such abstract philosophical ideas? They need to know how to run a business, how to make a living and pay for their family and raise a family. And these people would attack Socrates for being too abstract and studying mathematics and geometry and philosophy and things of this nature. And Socrates said, well, you are so right. I'm so foolish. You are so wise. I can't believe I didn't understand this. But please, if you ever see me doing this again with the youth, please feel that I'm unworthy of further comment. I'm not worth your time. In other words, he's saying, bug off. But he's doing it in a diplomatic way. And I think that that's what I try to do. And people ask me to do things that isn't really priority to me, that's not really important to me. I'll say, thank you. But right now, I would not be able to give my full attention to what you're asking. And I don't want to, I think you deserve to have somebody with full attention on it. And I wouldn't be able to do it because I have such important things on my plate right now that are very priority to me, that I wouldn't want to dilute my service to you and also not produce what is most important to me. So thank you, but I would pass at this point. Or you'll say, thank you, but really what you've asked me to do is not really high enough on my priorities to have a lot of meaning, and nothing against you, but that's just not meaningful to me at this moment. Or thank you for the opportunity. I'll consider it. And if it is important to me, I'll get back to you. There's many ways of approaching it diplomatically to be able to say thank you, but bug off. But if you don't say no to the people on the outside that are distracting you into lower priority things, and you don't say yes to the things that are really meaningful to you, you'll be scattered. And a lot of chronic fatigue syndrome is a result of trying to scatter yourself into doing too many things that are low on your values. And that's a symptom that is trying to give you feedback to let you know that. Because I've seen people with that condition, and I have them go through and prioritize what they do in a day. And we start to organize and prioritize a day. And it's amazing how their life comes back. So we sometimes basically have the lack of courage because we think that being rejected by people is bad. But being rejected by people, if you're doing something that's meaningful and authentic and you're sticking to something and achieving something, the very people that are going to reject you if you say no to them are going to be the people that respect you and are going to value your time in the future. I've seen it enough over a long enough period of time that the people I've said thank you but no thank you to, they eventually say, well, how do I buy your time? They'll value the time. Or how can I make it more valuable to you? And they come back with a greater proposal to occupy my time. And sometimes then they come back with something that I will do. So either way, we both win because they respect me. They'll realize how to, I'm exemplifying how to prioritize your time. And we all win out of it. And sometimes if I find that what they're asking is something meaningful and it's a priority to me, I'll just incorporate it. But you have to decide, because if you don't fill your day with really high priority things, the day will get away and you'll end up beating yourself up. And look, nobody is going to beat you up as much as you do. You might as well just say no to them and let them beat you up a bit and let them reject you. I had a gentleman in Houston one time who called me up. He found out I was in town, sometime in town for only a day in that city. And he called me up and he says, let's get together. It's been a while. And I said, well, I would love to, but I have a very short period of time in Houston. I have a very high priority list on my plate. And that meeting by itself with you would not be the highest priority thing I could do in the time that I have. And you're one of 14 people that asked me for that same hour. And now the only way I could spend time with you is to sit down and get all 14 names to you. And if you can coordinate a dinner, I can take an hour for dinner tonight and I can meet with all of you. And that way I'm not being biased to one or the others. But if not, I won't be able to meet because I have really a lot on my plate, but I'll make it for 14 people if you want to organize that. And the gentleman took the time to call those people. He got 11 of those people together on a short notice. And by God, we had a wonderful evening for an hour. I got to see a lot of the friends and get out of there. But it was not priority to sit one-on-one with each of those people. I don't have the time. It's not it. And he could say, well, you're not a friend. And I said, well, no, I'm just a person that's got a lot of things that I'm working on. And if I'm not your friend, you might want to ask if in my life I make decisions based on who I value and what I value, and you're not on the top of the list, you may want to know that just like a customer, they're not loyal to you. They're loyal to whoever provides the greatest service to you. I'm not loyal to you as a friend. I'm loyal to people that are helping me fulfill my dreams. And that's my time. It's my life is my time. So if you want to go and get that time with me, then see if you can offer more value. And that's how it works. And then some people think, well, that's very mercantile and that's not very caring. I said, well, it is caring. If what you're doing with your time is serving vast numbers of people, you're serving greater number of people by being prioritized and at the expense of maybe one that may be upset. But if they really respect what you're doing, they're going to understand that and they're going to prioritize and make sure that they do something that's valuable to you. If I want to meet with somebody, if they say no to me, that tells me that what I'm offering them is not high enough on their value list to take the time for it. So my job is not to be upset with them and judge them. My job is to see if I can offer more value and said, if we do this and this and this and we meet for this and I bring these people there, would you be willing to meet? If they say yes, that means I meet enough in their values. they made a decision based on what was more valuable to them, and that was more valuable. So I have the responsibility, if I want to meet with people, to make sure that it make it worth it to them to meet. That's a lesson. So you have to prioritize who you're hanging out with too.
Thank you, Dr. DeMartini. And what about dealing with, as an entrepreneur and business owner, and I'm sure the audience can align with this, is the challenges that come up sort of along the way during our lives. How do we deal with those, and if they detract us from our goals?
Well, it depends on the challenge. That's a little bit broad on the question, but whatever's happening, if you ask, how is this happening going to help me in the long run? You know, there's threats and opportunities that every company is facing, and both of them can be used to your advantage. If you have something that's a threat, you ask and sit down and go, okay, how can I use this as a great opportunity? I had a gentleman that was being attacked the other day, that was being attacked in the media, and we were sitting there and we had a chat about it, and he had quite a bit of attack. I mean, it's front page news. And I sat with him and I said, okay, let's look how we can turn it to our advantage. And he had started to do some of that, and he had some insights, but he was still a little burdened by it and was a little aggravated by what had happened. And it was not really true media, because sometimes media distorts things. And so he was pretty angry about it in some respects. And I said, so let's look at how we can use it to our advantage. And we sat down, and in 20 minutes, we came up with some incredible ways in which he could see that and use it to his advantage. And that threat became an opportunity, and it became a blessing. And he kind of chuckled. He goes, no, it's not even stressful now. I said, no, stress is the inability to see both sides of things, and it's your non-resilient state. But if you see if you see a drawback without a benefit, you're going to be stressed if it's coming towards you. And if you see a benefit without a drawback, you're going to be stressed if it's leaving you. But if you see both sides of things, the stress is gone. So it's basically taking your perception, because this is, you have the control of your perceptions, and asking questions. In the Breakthrough Experience Program, this is where I think I excel, and this is what I think people will get. One of the benefits you get out of that program is by learning the art of taking whatever's happened to you and asking questions to turn it into an opportunity where you're thankful. Because there's nothing in your life you can't turn into something thankful. I always say that there's nothing your mortal body can experience that your mortal soul can't love. And I know that sounds abstract and sounds a little bit fantasia to somebody who's never been to the Breakthrough Experience, but anybody who's been to Breakthrough knows exactly what I'm talking about, because they know that they have come in there with a challenge and they come out of there with an opportunity. And they come in there with something they were resenting and they came back with something they love. And they realize that it's just about their perceptions. And it's the quality of your life based on the quality of the questions you ask. If you ask questions that balance out your perceptions, you can take things that you think are challenges and obstacles and you can turn them into opportunities and great gifts and something to be thankful for. So anything you can't say thank you for is baggage. Anything you can say thank you for is fuel. And it's simply a question that you ask that makes the difference.
That's extremely powerful. Thank you. And what practical steps could you recommend that people start with today that will be the most effective for them to be able to kickstart their amazing life?
Well, I think the first thing to do is, I say this on some of my webinars, is to first define what your values are. That's the reason why I have in the Breakthrough Experience the value determination. That's why I have on my website a value determination process, that if you have not been on the website and you have not gone and done that, please take the time to do that. It's a complimentary service that you can take. And you want to be honest about it. You don't want to just bullshit yourself. You don't want to put down what you wish it would be or hope it would be or fantasize it be or what it used to be. You want to put objectively what your life demonstrates and the answers, the questions that are in this questionnaire, and get clear about what you really value and start to structure and orchestrate your life. You're basically the orchestra leader. And if you're not orchestrating your life the way you want it, it's going to keep being created in the way you don't. And so first is defining what your values are. Look at what those priorities are, check them and confirm them. Because once you get clear on that, you can start to structure your life by priority, because your priorities will be according to that. And once you get clear on that, you start asking yourself, what is the one thing I can do today that I know is the highest priority thing I can do to fulfill my highest value? If you stick to the highest priority, or in what I've done over the years, I've asked, what are the 7 highest priority action steps I can do today that can help me fulfill it? But you can even go down to the 1. What is the highest priority action that I can do right now that can help me fulfill my mission on planet Earth? My mission is an expression of my highest value. And if you go and do that, and make sure it's not projects that take days, weeks, months, or years, but a daily action. What is the highest priority daily action that I can do today that can move me one step closer to my dreams? If you're doing that every single day, it's impossible for you to continue to do that day after day without moving closer to an amazing life. I'm absolutely certain that works. I learned that from Mary Kay Cosmetics. She built a massive organization around it and helped millions of women around the world and families. And it works, and it's worked for me. And I use 7, but you can use 1, as Gary Keller does it, and the one thing. But you do that every day. And then if you finish that 2 hours into the day, ask it again. But make sure that you are documenting that day and something you can get done that day. Better to chunk it down into small bites. When you have a goal, if you're not chunking it down into small enough bites, you'll set things that have too big a time horizon, and then you'll procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate doing it. You want to make sure your goals are chunked down into small enough bites. You want to make sure that those bites are linked to your highest values or congruent with them. And you want to make sure that you can see it in your mind's eye and plan the whole thing out. Because an unclear, unchunked, unlinked goal is going to get procrastinated, hesitated, and frustrated with. But once it's clear in your mind's eye, once it's chunked down into small enough bites where the time horizons are within the take action step thing, and once it's chunked and you have the action steps in front of you, you just act. And you do the by priority. And then you link it to your highest values to make sure it's actually got the juice of the why driving it. And you're on your way to achieving something amazing. And then you want to make sure you metric what you're doing to make sure you're getting results and document the results you're doing to get feedback to know what's working and what's not working. You know, I always ask, what is it I would absolutely love to do? How do I get handsomely paid to do it? What are the highest priority actions I can do today to make it happen? What obstacles might I run into and how do I solve in advance? What worked and what didn't work today? How do I do it more effective and efficiently? And how did whatever I experienced today, how did it serve me and fulfill my mission? And if you do that, it's impossible for you not to make progress towards the goal. And that goal is living an amazing life. Because the amazing life is defined by your priorities, your values, and what you set out as a plan.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dr. DeMartini Show. To determine and discover your values, head over to drdemartini.com, where you will also find blogs, videos, research materials, online courses, and exactly how you can sign up to become part of the breakthrough experience in your local city. Thanks for tuning in. If you would love to follow Dr. DeMartini on any of his social media platforms, you can do so by searching for Dr. John DeMartini. We look forward to sharing more inspired insights on our next episode. Bye for now.